Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host Tony Smith and John Osher.
Welcome in Jacksonville. Happy post St. Patrick's Day. Hope you're all feeling good this morning. I know.
Big night for you?
No.
All right.
I did nothing for St. Patrick's Day. Look, I'm a professional, John. I don't know if you knew this about me.
I didn't.
But as a professional who had an hour of radio to do last night, I refrained from imbibing yesterday afternoon, knowing I was going to have to be on air and knowing I'd have to get up around 7, 7:30 this morning to come do this show. I didn't go out afterwards.
That's fair.
Either. So St. Patrick's Day, I did an hour of radio. That's how I celebrated St. Patrick's Day.
I didn't go out either. And it had nothing to do with being professional. It just had something to do with being old.
Right. So. No, I would have enjoyed going
different
out.
Different paths.
And I know the ladies at Helmets and Heels, they were out at Cole Haynes, and that looked like a really good time. I know Frangie got out there for the festivities last night. I wish I could have gone out, but I have a feeling I would be regretting it about now if I had made
that
decision.
Yeah, you wish last night you had been out. You don't wish now you.
No, I'm perfectly content with the decision I made as of this morning. A lot to get into today. You have mock draft version 3.0 that got put up on the site here in the last day or so. We'll take a look at that. And we'll talk about what the Jaguars could or should be looking at there with that number three pick. Has free agency, what they've done to this point, affected that picture at all for Jacksonville? Want to talk about the running back position in Jacksonville, not just because we want to talk about DeMarco Murray still, but does the team pursuing a running back like DeMarco Murray indicate anything about where Dave Caldwell feels like this roster is as far as being ready or close to ready to competing? As he said repeatedly, he feels like running back is kind of that last piece that you bring in. So is the pursuit of DeMarco Murray an indication that Dave Caldwell feels like this team is ready to compete now? We'll talk about that today. But yesterday, the big news around the National Football League, and I want to get your take on it before we get into any of that. Chris Borland stepping away at the age of 24. And it's been a little crazy to me watching in the last day the way the anti-football people are crowing about this kind of thing, about how violent this sport is, how evil the game of football is. And to me, it's just a guy who's 24 years old who went through the car wreck that is an NFL season and said, I'm not doing this anymore. I don't want any more of this.
Well, and what you wonder is, and there's no way to predict it until you see it play out, is this an outlier? Meaning, is this a guy who's looked at it and said, you know what? This is violent. Everybody who's played the game will tell you, I mean, it's not any more violent than it was 20 years ago when I started covering it. And I had guys like Baselli and these people who would tell me after games and during the course of the season, you just got an idea when you watched them go through what they went through, it just, what a physical toll it takes. Is he an outlier, or is it part of something where more guys are going to say, you know what, I don't need this? You wonder if guys who have played through that first contract or have gotten a certain amount of money could start saying, you know what, I have enough now. I have enough to live the rest of my life on. I don't know that I want to keep going. I kind of doubt that happens because, again, from talking to players who have played, even with the physical toll that it takes, even with the ramifications afterward, many say, yeah, I'd go back and do it again. At the same time, you're starting to see many more say, you know what, I might have rethought this. So with more education, will you see more guys like this? I tend to doubt this becomes a trend, but it is certainly something that is far more of a topic than you would have expected it to be 5 years ago.
Yeah, I think players like Chris Borland who want to step away from it are in the vast minority among the guys who are actually playing the game. I think most of them do
have. There have been guys throughout the course of the history of this league who've stepped away from it before.
Sure.
This is obviously news because of all the things that have been going on with the medical studies, with the concussion. I mean, I'm stating the obvious here, but this becomes part of that trend in that story, and that's fine. But there have been guys who have stepped away early. People say, why did you do it? Well, you know, everybody's had their reasons. He has his reasons, and you do always hear guys who, after their career is over, say, yeah, I thought about stepping away at this point. I know the toll it's taken on the body. But there are also guys who say, look, this is what I do. This is the decision I made to do this, and I'm willing to live with the risk. So, again, it's certainly a fascinating chapter of this story that I don't know that we know how it's going to end.
No, we've always had guys who step away when on their time frame. There's always been guys who have been willing to do that. A couple names that jumped to mind to me, Robert Smith, the guy that Mike and I talked about just last week, was that way. Had the best year of his career in a very young career and said, that's it, I'm done. I'm walking away while I'm healthy and I feel good about where I am physically. Barry Sanders was a guy who maybe could have played, you know, a handful of more years, and was really at his peak as well when he said, I'm stepping away.
Different circumstances, but Jim Brown stepped away after 9 years.
Sure.
You know, maybe the greatest player of all time. Now, again, there was something of a, I was not old enough to know what was going on at that point, but there were contract deals there. He had a movie career, but again, stepped away when he had more years left in him. And famously thought about coming back when he was 50 on the cover of Sports Illustrated when I was in college.
Yes, really he did. You know, and maybe
Mike Reed stepped away too, as I recall.
Yeah.
Penn State defensive tackle. I was very young at the time, but played for the Cincinnati Bengals, was a Pro Bowler, and stepped away at the height of his career. So it happens, but I don't think it's fair to minimize the fact that in this incident, he stepped away because of the health concerns, because of what's going on. It's so tightly associated with the concussion story, with the physical toll story, that I'm not going to try to say, well, other players have done it, so it doesn't make this as important. This is an important part of this story.
Yeah, and I made it clear yesterday. Look, a guy, if he's thinking about the long-term impacts on his health while he's on the field, he can't be out there.
Right.
He can't be out for himself and for the guys around him. Those kind of thoughts can't be entering your head while you're out there actually playing the game. So if Borland was feeling those things, those anxieties, then he needed to step away. And I get it from a fan perspective. I know Crosstalk yesterday talking with T-Wig, he brought up the analogy of a boxer, you know, quitting in the ring, taking that knee and saying, I'm not doing it anymore. And it struck me after we got done with Crosstalk, and I texted him about this, but as a fan, right, you watch a boxer in the ring take that knee and say, I'm done. As a fan of the fight game, you're like, why'd the guy step in the ring in the first place? If he doesn't have the heart to finish the fight that he's going to be involved in, he knew what could happen when he stepped in, why doesn't the guy finish the fight? And your inclination is to call the guy a quitter. As a man and as a person, I look at a guy who takes a knee in a fight and I say, I get that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to get punched in the head anymore either.
Right.
You know, I totally understand. I think it's one of these rare situations where there is no right answer, right? Where this is a guy who made a decision because it was his personal decision. The question is, what are the ramifications that come out of this? From an NFL perspective, what changes in the process of taking a look at these players before they ever get to the NFL? Like, does anything change in the process of evaluating a player, trying to vet out what their mentality is? Because this is a guy who 1 year into his career, 24 years old, is going to be handed the spot that Patrick Willis had in San Francisco for the last 8 years and has decided and said, I'm done. Does anything change from a scouting perspective in this league with these guys?
I think, you know, I think maybe teams will meet on it. They'll try to figure something out. But there's so many psychologists and psychological tests. And I'm not going to say that the ways that they have to judge those things are perfect. But I don't think there is a perfect way to do that. But I don't know how much more effort can be made in that area. Because you hear about so many psychological tests they give. They sit across from these guys. They talk to their college coaches. They do as much research as they possibly can. I don't know that this incident changes what you can go try to find out. Meaning, you know, and I'm going to use the word desire for lack of a better word. Does a player have the desire and they want to play this game for a long period of time despite knowing the risks? You know, my guess is there are already parts of these tests that they give them that are designed as best you can to try to test that. You know, when I was covering the Colts, there was a guy named Quinn Pidcock, who was a third-round pick, a defensive tackle, played for, I believe, a year, and then just didn't show up for camp the next year. and I'm paraphrasing it, and there are other issues, but it sort of came out later that he just didn't want to play. Spent that year, there were some stories playing Call of Duty, and just, didn't have the desire to play at that point, tried to come back with Seattle later, but...
How did the Colts... Like, you were in that
building. They weren't
thrilled. Right. But how did the organization respond to it as far as did anything change that you could tell in their process?
No, not really. I mean, there wasn't very much to change because that's part of the process. You try to get a gauge for what this guy is going to do under fire, for how he's going to... you're paying these guys a lot of money in the end.
Right.
And you're investing huge sections of your draft. A third-round pick out of your top seven picks that year is a significant portion of how you're trying to build a roster. So they check it. They find, and it's hard to predict when you've talked to a college coach. They were very close at the time with Jim Tressel of Ohio State. You do your research, you talk to a guy, and, you were 23 once. Mm-hmm. I was 23 once. A lot can change in your life, your mindset between the age of 22 and 23.
Sure.
So I don't know that there's very much to do to vet that beyond what they're already doing, because it involves trying to see the future, and that's a tough thing. You're good at it. I'm not.
Yeah, it's such a weird process, because when you're playing football, it starts in high school. If you go to a public school as opposed to a private school, they don't cut anybody.
Right.
Right? I mean, so it's basically, if you're willing to stay out there and duke it out,
mm-hmm.
you're going to be a part of that football team, as long as you're willing to keep showing up. Now, college is a little bit different most places, but if you're willing to go through that 4 years in high school...
Coach Boone didn't cut anybody. Right. Remember the Titans, baby.
Oh, yeah. And that 4 years in college, that grind for those 8 years,
yeah.
and then you get a year into the league, and it's like, nope, 9, 10 years of this, that's enough for me. I don't want to deal with it anymore. It's just, it's weird where that switch comes from in these players' minds, I guess.
You don't know, too, sometimes why guys play, why they have. And again, I'm not trying to put words in this young man's head. I don't, you don't know what goes on in guys' minds, but, you don't know who they're playing for when they're in high school. Are they playing for their parents? Are they playing because they feel like it's expected of them? And then they get to college, they've been given a scholarship. Oh my goodness, this group of people in my life still want me to play. And then once they get to the NFL, they realize, this isn't that much fun anymore, or
right.
this isn't that much, I kept expecting something to click where, yes, this is still important to me, and it's not. So again, I have no idea what really deep down went into this decision, but every person's on there, every person has their own, has to be true to themselves in this sort of situation.
Exactly. Yeah.
So if it is what he wants to do, then, you would hope everybody would say, hey, that's on you.
Yeah. But
or
they don't,
up to you.
Yeah.
Not on you.
They don't have to, though. It's one of those things where I get it. If I was a 49ers fan, if this were to
sure.
happen with, one of the guys that the Jaguars had drafted last year, I'd probably be like if Telvin Smith came out today and said, you know what, I'm done. As someone who the fans out there, they could be as frustrated as they wanted to be with that guy. I would totally understand that from their perspective. And I would try to understand it from his, too, knowing the physical toll that the sport takes on a person to play
yeah.
the game. And that's essentially the situation the 49ers are in. A guy that they felt that good about is walking away.
And and there's always a couple ways to look at it. Yes, it's from the individual point of view, which we've been talking about, but this is much like when a player is injured or something happens off the field. As a team, all of a sudden, this is a, probably more important than just one of 22. This is a critical position, what they're trying to do. Now all of a sudden they've got to go replace it. They've
yep.
got to rebuild it. They've got to rescout it next year.
And it's not like Jacksonville hasn't dealt with that in the last
sure.
couple of years with Blackmon.
Very similar to that.
And
right.
still are trying to. I mean, they drafted what they thought would be the answer, but
you have certain
spend that
number
kind
of
draft
of building
capital.
Block.
Right.
You have a certain number of building blocks that you're trying to build your organization with, and all of a sudden if Telvin Smith's probably the best example, or if Sip all of a sudden didn't show up tomorrow and I'm tired of it. Well,
yeah.
that's a... Wow, all of a sudden now we've got to go back and readdress the safety position and readdress what we're doing here and what are we building around. So it's tough.
No, it's a tough situation for the team to be in, and I could understand their frustration. Again, though, if Borland is looking at it and it's something that's in his head, then he needs to get out. You know, I just don't think you can stick around if you're not totally committed
right.
to what's going on in the NFL, and it'll eat you up if you don't. It has to be 100%. The fan feedback spotlight today, we're going to turn our attention to the Jags, I promise. We're not going to talk Borland all day long. We're going to turn our attention to it with the mock draft that you put up here in just a couple of moments. But our fan feedback spotlight today, simple enough. What letter of grade would you assign the Jaguars for free agency? What letter grade would you assign the Jags for their free agent efforts, the seven guys that they've brought in, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at John Osher on Twitter, O-E-H-S-E-R, at 1010XL Tyler, also on our Facebook page, facebook.com/Jaguars today. What letter grade would you give the Jags? We want to get your input on that. We'll get some of your answers a little bit later on in the show. Let's take a look at Mock Draft 3.0. Once you start them, it's every couple weeks, isn't it? You got to throw another one up there.
And this one was done after the first couple of weeks of pro days, after free agency. And I thought the theme was, what you find is the first 5, 6, 7 picks don't change very drastically because of free agency.
Right.
Because they're such prime level players. They're the guys who are perceived, at least, as being so talented that some team is going to take them there because they make, even if you've got a guy at that position, they're good enough to make you stronger and they're good enough to be core players. So you don't see a whole lot of the mock drafts change drastically on free agency. But once you get past maybe the top 10, then teams maybe are drafting more for slots. So if a team is drafted a linebacker, or if they've signed a running back, or if they signed a wide receiver, then you might think, okay, that need, if they're drafting for need there, it changes a little bit.
He's John Osher, Mock Draft 3.0, up on Jaguars.com right now. We'll discuss it. Are the Jaguars going to address what we would consider to be their biggest need there at number 3? We'll talk about it next. I'm Fat Tony, Mike Dempsey on vacation all week long as we continue on a Metro Rooter Wednesday edition of Jaguars Today here on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Rolling along here on a Metro Rooter Wednesday. Jaguars Today, Mike Dempsey on vacation. I'm Fat Tony, John Osher, Jaguars.com senior writer, alongside. Talking a little Chris Borland there off the top. And again, it's hard for me to wrap my head around a guy that's 24 and walking away from that kind of money and that kind of opportunity.
Well, you did it.
No, and as I shared last night, I'm an idiot when it comes to that kind of stuff. Like, I once got seriously concussed. I mean, seriously concussed playing a pickup football game in my senior year of high school, just in PE class, right? Like, I was tackling a guy, he had 50, 60 pounds on me. I knew I shouldn't even be trying to do this without pads.
You're playing tackle football in PE?
Yeah. We weren't supposed to. Like, the whole thing was stupid, but I tackled a guy, and I wrapped him up, and I rolled because I couldn't take him down. I mean, he had 60 pounds on me.
What school did you go to?
Wolfson.
Jail?
Wolfson. Okay. And so when I tackled him, he came down. My head was on the ground, and his knee came down on the side of my head. And my lights, bam. I mean, I was out like a light. And I came to. I had a guy under each arm carrying me. I didn't know who I was. I didn't know where
you
I was.
You shook it off and said, I'm playing.
No.
Okay.
45 seconds, I didn't know who or where or what I was doing, right? It's the scariest 45 seconds maybe of my life. And then everything came back to me. I went home. I didn't tell my parents. I just stayed up as late as I possibly could that night.
But you practiced the next day.
I played the next day.
All right, Noel.
Yeah, and like I think back on that, every time that I pick up my phone to go look something up, and then as soon as I pick it up, I forget what I was looking for. I'm all like, right. Yep, senior year, PE. Like every time I have one of those moments,
that's
comes
the alcohol.
Back to me. I don't think so. I haven't done enough of the alcohol to have that kind of effect on me. But look, man, everybody, you do what you got to do for yourself and your family, whatever you think is the right thing, and you take the heat, you know, for those decisions that you make. With that being said, let's turn our attention to the Jacksonville Jaguars. You got Mock Draft 3.0 up there on the website. I know
strikingly similar to Mock Draft 2.0.
Yes,
I will admit
it is,
that.
Especially from a Jaguars perspective.
Yeah.
But Jameis Winston, I think everybody kind of feels like it's going to be the number one overall pick right now. Whether he's at the draft or not is yet to be seen, but expected
whatever.
To be the number one overall pick. Number two, you have Leonard Williams going to Tennessee, and the only I could if they fell in love with Marcus Mariota, that pick would make some sense for them, but it just doesn't feel like they're going to.
I can't
right now.
See that franchise with that head coach falling in love with that quarterback.
Me either.
I mean, I just, you know, Wisenhunt, it just doesn't fit that he would want a spread quarterback. I just, you know,
sure.
Maybe he will, but there's no signs of that. And, you know, again, the interesting thing, the fascinating thing about the draft is we all sit here and every storyline we all talk about and see play out, it ain't going to be that way on draft night. Yeah, there's going to be chaos on draft night. There's going to be trades. There's going to be whatnot. But in terms of sitting here 6 weeks out, it, you know, every sign you see says Mariota and Williams 1-2.
It does. It does right now. And Williams, probably the best non-quarterback in this draft, if you were looking at the grades of different people right now. So it would make sense mm-hmm. that he would go number two to Tennessee if they're not looking to draft the quarterback. And the quarterback situation is interesting. I've been talking about this for the last couple days, but how nice is it in Jacksonville that we're going into a draft for the first time in, really, it feels like a decade.
Long time, right.
Where you're not talking about, well, what can they do at the quarterback position? Is Marcus Mariota worth the number three overall pick?
Right.
Do they need to get to two if they really like Marcus Mariota? Do you wait until the top of the second round and take a look at a guy like Bryce Petty or Brett Hundley? All these questions are questions that the Tennessee Titans have to right. deal with this offseason, not us.
And I think even the people, and there are a few sort of voices in the wilderness who say, well, you need to take quarterbacks until you find one, so take a guy high, take Mariota. Even the people who would normally be saying that, I think, understand that what Mariota does, even if you wanted to be that person who's saying take a franchise quarterback until you find one and then mm-hmm. trade him away, I think most people get that Mariota, because of the style he plays, has a long enough way to go that even that doesn't make sense here. Now, if it was Winston, looking a little more pro-ready, I think if the Jags had the number one pick and it was Winston in this conversation, I think you would hear more of those cries in the darkness. They still wouldn't do it. They still would not. They're comfortable with what they've got, and they should be.
Sure.
But I don't think even the outlying consensus is saying much about Jameis Winston because they've got their guy. I mean, Marcus Mariota because Blake is clearly a more NFL skill ready for what this offense is going to do than Mariota would be.
He is, and I think your general manager made it clear last year by drafting Blake Bortles and the comments that Dave Caldwell made after they drafted Blake Bortles, basically saying, look, we evaluated what was available to mm-hmm. us right now and what was going to be available to us in the 2015 draft, and we right. made the decision that Blake Bortles is the most NFL-ready right. prospect.
And you have to remember if you listen to Dave Caldwell over the course of time, he's pretty forthcoming and upfront about what he likes in a player. And I think it was before the draft or last year around the draft, he was very specific. He wants a guy. He believes in the NFL, a quarterback has to be able to win from the pocket. And some of that's his background. He was around Peyton Manning and had success in Indy with that. Matt Ryan's that kind of player. But I don't see any way in the world that he would be regretting Blake Bortles because Mariota's out there because of
right.
the style that Mariota plays. Blake Bortles being a big, strong guy who can make throws from the pocket, that's what Dave Caldwell thinks you have to do to win in the NFL quarterback, and he happens to be right.
So Winston Williams, 1-2, number three, got Dante Fowler. A lot of people have Fowler
who
coming
doesn't?
To Jacksonville right now.
I'm really going on a limb there with Fowler, aren't I?
But it brings up...
Shaking it up.
Right. It brings up an interesting discussion from the standpoint of what is the Jaguars' biggest need getting to this point in the draft. I know Caldwell has stated before, and we've talked about it, left tackle, quarterback, pass rusher.
Right.
That's what you do at the top end of the first round of the NFL draft. And they're kind of in position because they've taken left tackle and quarterback that a
right.
lot of people are assuming it's going to be pass rusher. But I think there's more to it than that, John.
Well, it's, again, I think he likes that he's really not in a situation where, if they didn't go draft a pass rusher, if they don't go get a guy, nobody's going to say, oh, my goodness, they can't go function next year because they didn't draft a pass rusher. So they've got themselves into a situation where they can line up, where they feel good about their entire roster. At the same time, if you're trying to build building blocks, and if you're trying to put your roster in the best situation to grow going ahead, at some point you want a guy that other teams have to account for when he's rushing the passer. It's also a situation where that need and that that structure that you need, that that place that you want to build, it coincides with it being a very good draft at that position.
Sure.
So I don't think that's an accident. I'm they future scout, and I think they probably looked at it and said, yeah, there looks like there might be a lot of guys at that position. So if we're drafting high, if we're drafting seventh, if we're drafting ninth, whatever we're going to draft, and this is talking as they would have been talking last April, it looks like there's going to be a bunch of guys who can rush the passer in this draft, so let's maybe get that one. And I just, it's very hard for me to imagine that if they're picking in the top 10, even if they trade back, that it wouldn't be pass rusher there. The only exception to that is if they would be able to trade back and all of a sudden a couple of the pass rushers they really love are gone, and White or Cooper are sitting there.
Right.
It becomes intriguing because they didn't get a receiver in free agency. But then the thing that sort of negates that is he keeps talking about wanting a slot guy, and I don't know that you solve that by going the top 10 with either of these guys.
Right, and I think when you look at positions of need on the roster, and if you were going to, whatever they happen to be in whatever order, free safety is probably something you still want to take a look at upgrading.
Hard to get that in this draft,
right,
with the slot we're talking about.
Right. Maybe the center position, something else on the offensive line where you're looking for some kind of depth there. Again, that's not something you're going to be looking at number three.
Probably not at three.
Linebacker, maybe something you're still looking to upgrade, yep, but you're probably not doing that at three.
Right.
You may be looking at that slot position in the wide receiver core, but again, you're probably not doing that at three.
Right.
Basically, what it comes down to is running back and that pass rush defensive end would be the other two needs that I see.
You're not doing running back
right
at three either. So
it eliminates everything except the pass rusher is where the value is for you at number three, too.
To me, the thing that would throw a wrench in it would be if all of a sudden, and it's looking more and more like a trade's going to be tough. We talked about it during the break. But a good trade for value and the right kind of picks could throw a wrench into that thinking. But I think my guess is that's the only thing that would throw a wrench into it. I just can't see them going any other way but pass rusher.
If they move down, I think a lot of things can come into play.
Sure.
If they move down, that may, depending on how far they go, may bring offensive line into it. It could certainly bring wide receiver into it for me.
Right.
I'm not thinking about wide receiver at number three. I know a lot of fans out there would love to see Amari Cooper be the name called. I just don't expect it because of the value of that pick and what they need and what you said a moment ago about...
Is Cooper a slot guy, though?
I don't know. What you said a moment ago about Dave Caldwell last year when he's getting ready for that draft and this one, looking ahead to not only what would be available to him this year, but what this roster would need.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when you look at what this roster is going to need, you got Chris Clemons. How much longer can you really rely on that guy at that kind of position?
Sure.
What, a year? Maybe two, maybe, but you're probably talking about one more good year from him. You got Andre Branch, who's coming up on a contract year.
Chris
really
Clemons as
him?
Part of this long-term core was never a thing.
No.
Okay.
No.
So, and he knew that. Everybody knew that. And that's why the contract was structured the way it was. It's why all those things happen. So at some point, you've got to get that Leo pass rusher. You've got to get that guy coming off the edge. And, you know, because of the way they scout, because of the way they do things, everything points to be in that. I also think that's a reason you didn't see them do anything about it in free agency. They left that spot. It's very logical to see a guy sliding in there and getting a lot of playing time out at that spot.
Sure. And I think when you look at it, Clemons for another year, Branch, you got a year with him right now. Ryan Davis is a guy that maybe you like, but you probably don't like him as an every down Leo, unless
never
he develops
yet
into something.
So, right.
Right? Chris Smith is more of a developmental type
sure
player to me. Maybe they find something in him. Maybe they don't. But
those guys you just listed are the kinds of guys, short of Clemons, who's done it in this league and established himself. You know, he deserves to be out of this group. The other three guys are what you want if you're building a long-term competitive roster, you want a stud draft pick, which is what they would have at number three, mm-hmm. and then you want two or three other guys who are developing, who are playing, who come in and give you time, who might develop and have spurts where they're really, really good, who might develop into something. Again, I keep saying it's okay to have a bunch of good players that you've seen good things of at one spot, because they're not all going to turn into superstars, but
right.
you like having that number of guys. That's a good thing. We haven't had it around here enough.
No, we haven't. And it's also just as another indicator of where they're going with that third mm-hmm. pick. It's how much they need a young building block at that spot.
Right.
Because not only the decisions they're going to have to make next offseason, but the position they're in this one.
Right.
It all seems to come together for it to be pass rusher there at number three.
An interesting thing hanging out there. If there were safeties in this first round, if this was a year where there were a couple of free safeties down in the 15-25 area, which there's not, boy, then you would have an interesting dilemma or challenge or whatever. Then it would be really tempting to trade back, or
sure.
then it would be tempting to try to get up. There's just not a free safety name out there that seems to make a lot of sense with either of the first two picks. It's just not there.
No.
And again, it speaks to the big challenge. Once McCourty wasn't here, boy, they had a challenge trying to figure out what they're going to do at that spot. Sergio Brown might be it. I think that remains to be seen. But the fact that there's nothing really there in the draft makes that an interesting spot, and it sort of takes away a storyline, I think, going into the draft.
The Jags certainly didn't address that right defensive end in free agency, but they did pursue a running back, just one, but they did pursue a running back in DeMarco Murray in this year's free agency. We talked a moment ago about not going after that Leo right defensive end position. Does that indicate anything about what they may be doing in the draft? Also, what does it indicate about them and how they feel about the running back position and how close this roster is to being competitive? We'll talk about that here in a moment as we continue on a Metro Rooter Wednesday on Jaguars Today. I'm Fat Tony alongside John Osier on 1010XL 92.5 FM. All right, we're asking you today on the Fan Feedback Spotlight, what letter grade would you assign the Jaguars in free agency? Simple to get in on that conversation at 1010XL, Fat Tony, at John Osier, that's O-E-H-S-E-R, at 1010XL Tyler, and on our Facebook page, Jaguars Today on Facebook. What letter grade would you give the Jags in free agency? Talking a few moments ago about the mock draft you just put up there, John.
Oh, yeah.
And
mock draft.
They really didn't go after a pure pass rusher in free agency, and there wasn't a whole lot of those available
right.
to them. But
well,
they decided
and
no
that,
on Arapo.
Guess what?
And
there's not anyone out there because those guys get re-signed.
They do.
And that's where it's important to try to get premium players in the draft at positions where that's true. And that's why you have to get quarterbacks in the draft. It's why you usually have to get left tackles,
mm-hmm.
pass rushers, all those things, you know. Maybe free safety is becoming that if you ever
like
have
it,
one.
Doesn't it? Yeah.
So that's where when you have these premium picks, you need to hit on guys at those premium positions. Justin Houston out there for a very brief time or not even out there.
No.
Never hit and never gets past the parameter period in franchise for a reason, because you can't – it's very hard to go get those guys in free agency unless there's a red flag or something's wrong.
Yeah. I mean, Jason Pierre-Paul gets franchised in New York.
Which
Justin Houston gets franchised
hasn't
in Kansas
really
City.
Been overly productive except for maybe 1 year and a half a year, Jason Pierre-Paul.
I really like him.
But hasn't probably been as good since the one season he had, and yet still more than good enough for that team to make sure he doesn't get away.
Yeah.
The point.
Yeah. It's hard to find a guy
had
like
been
Jason
as productive
Pierre-Paul.
As he was at a different position, they perhaps handle that differently is my point. At that
Maybe.
Position, when you have that sort of potential, it's perceived and handled differently.
Maybe. I mean, he's got 40 sacks in 5 years, which is pretty good.
Right.
It's pretty good production, and he has had a couple monster years
mm-hmm.
In the league. Greg Hardy is a guy who hit free agency. The Jags apparently not going to be in on that. Dallas and Tampa Bay, the last two teams, apparently he took a physical with Dallas, and they're still negotiating both sides on that one, so he's probably going to wind up in one of those two spots.
The physical ain't the issue there.
No, 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 it's definitely
right.
not the issue. But the Jags don't go after pass rusher in free agency, which makes me think all the more that they're probably looking at pass rusher with that number three spot in the draft. What they did do is make a serious offer to DeMarco Murray.
Sure.
This isn't to talk about DeMarco Murray. This is to talk about running back in general on this roster. Dave Caldwell has said that he feels like running back is one of those last pieces you bring in, and in part because of the shelf life of running backs in this league. When you bring one in and he's going to be effective, you want him to be effective when your whole roster is ready to be.
Absolutely.
During that 2 or 3, 4 year period where a guy's going to be really good, you want your roster to be ready for that guy. A lot of people talking about running back in the second round, third round for this football team right now because it does feel like a pretty big need for them to find a guy that can be their rock in the backfield. So if the idea is they avoid pass rusher in free agency to address it at number three in the draft, if they're seriously looking at running back in the second round, does that indicate anything to you about where Dave Caldwell feels like this roster is?
Yeah, I mean, he thinks it's a lot better than it was 2 years ago. Now, I don't know for sure if it will be running back in the second round. I mean, I don't think, as much as we're all sort of writing and talking about that as being in stone, it doesn't have to be second round. If this is a deep running back class,
sure.
If we're assuming it's Gurley and Melvin Gordon that people think are the top two, if those guys are gone and there's five guys there and he's assuming that somebody's going to slip to the third round, then it wouldn't shock you to see him bypass it at the top of the second, because top of the third, historically, guess where DeMarco Murray was drafted?
Sure.
Third round. So
second and third round are where running backs are.
Yeah, there's no reason to think you can't go get a guy in the third round. Just because they miss or just because they don't go after it in the second round doesn't mean it's not important. I guess the question is, what does DeMarco Murray in the pursuit of that say about the running back position? It certainly means that they think they're more ready for that. On the other hand, so much of DeMarco Murray felt like, look, we've got money, and then there's this player. Let's go give him X amount of money, but not go above X.
Sure.
So it says they're more ready, but I don't think that it says that they look at the roster and go, oh, my goodness, we are deficient if we don't go get this. I think that was an opportunity that they saw, and they said, why not?
If they got, with the way the team is set up right now, and again, we don't know how all these guys are going to project as far as the guys they brought in free agency, and I like a lot of them. I really like Julius Thomas. Mm-hmm. I like what I've seen from Parnell. I think House is a guy that you watch his tape, and sometimes you're like, wow, that guy's a player, and sometimes you're like, wow, where did his head go? Like, he's that type of guy when I watch him. So,
well, again,
I'm curious.
Now, bear in mind with House, when you think about what Dave Caldwell said, and he laid it out very clearly, he wasn't among the top five. That was not a position that they felt like they had to go get.
Right.
It was a position where they felt like, okay, we can go get it and we can get better and deeper over here. That was the second wave. That was the spirit of that signing was, okay, since we didn't get these guys, now let's go get stronger at these other areas. So anyway,
yeah, it was Devin McCourty. We couldn't get Devin McCourty, so we wanted to get these three guys.
Right.
That was going to be our target because we didn't get Devin. A lot of questions about how effective these players are going to be as starters once we get to the regular season, and that's fair to have those kind of questions. But if you look at them, the guys that they're plugging into the lineup through free agency, if they do draft a pass rusher there at number three,
right,
it would feel like, do you think they are kind of having that running back that they can rely on away from being a reasonably good football team? Again, a lot of other things have to work out for them.
I'm a tough person to ask that question because I so believe that the running game is dependent on so many things around it rather than your running back. The offensive line still needs to improve, and the passing game needs to become more of a threat. I think if you'd brought DeMarco Murray in here and nothing changed from last year and teams were still able to stack the box, I don't know how effective he would have been. Things have to get better. The line has to block for the run better, and the pass has to be more of a threat so the teams can't focus on stopping the run. Denard Robinson, for 3 or 4 games, when teams were lining up to really stop Blake Bortles and that element right for the first half of the season, that's, or not for the first half, or right before the break, that's when the running game really got going. That's when they got going against Cleveland. They had a lot of runs. They had looked like a very productive running game. Well, then the passing offense sort of stagnated a little bit. Teams went back to being able to focus on the run, and then it slowed down a lot. So you've got to have everything else functioning around it for the running game to be effective. From all the moves they've made, from Blake being a year older, from the receivers being a little older, they ought to be closer to that. So whoever they bring in should be a more effective running back than it was last year.
From a team-building perspective, when you take a look at, again, you need Blake Bortles to take that step forward so the passing game steps up. That includes guys like Allen Robinson and Marquise Lee mm-hmm. taking that next step in their career. You're hoping that Julius Thomas adds that legit threat at the tight end position to kind of take over the middle of the field mm-hmm. for you a little bit more. Maybe you're still looking to do something with that slot position, but Allen Hurns was pretty effective
sure.
last year for this football team, so you hope that he takes a step forward too. You bring in a right tackle. So on the offensive side of the ball, you're hoping that a lot of things take that step forward. From a team-building perspective, do you assume when you're making moves in the draft that those positions are taking that step forward and make your decision based on that? I mean, how do you balance
I think you that have step? To, in theory, on that. Okay. I mean, I think you have to, at some point, you have to say, we believe that two of these receivers are going to develop. And they're going to keep, you know, because you can't keep drafting the same spot over and over again immediately. Meaning, you drafted two second-round wide receivers last year. I don't think you go out and draft two more and then two more. You've got to give these guys a little room to develop
right.
if they've shown signs. And you have to do a good job self-scouting even beyond what the buzz is right now. You have to go back and really look at Allen Robinson and Marquise Lee and say, okay, if we were scouting right now, would we want these players? And be honest with yourself. I think on those two guys, they certainly do. On Allen Hurns, they certainly do. So they feel good about it.
Sure.
But, you know, I think the move and the effort and the things said last week show you where they think they are. They feel good on the outside. Marquise Lee, Allen Robinson, they feel good about how those guys are going to develop. They would like a big-time presence in the slot. At receiver, they didn't get it. Now they're hoping Julius Thomas can come in and be that big-time presence and maybe supplement it with something else on the other side. Supplement was something else at the receiver position.
Yeah, that makes sense. We got the This State in Football History Honda Driver on the NFL coming up next as we continue along here on a Wednesday edition. Metro Rooter Wednesday for all size plumbing jobs, residential, commercial, industrial, septic systems, restaurant, grease trap service, and much more. Same day service that includes your weekends. Everybody, the right people, the right equipment, serving Jacksonville since 1978. Just visit MetroRooter.com or give them a call at 695-1911, 695-1911. We got This State in Football History, the Honda Drive around the NFL right around the corner here on a Wednesday edition of Jaguars Today.
And now, This State in Football History.
All right, This State in Football History presented to you this week by the Best Fence Company of Jacksonville. One notable thing on this date in football history, 1970, March 18th, 1970, NFL selected Wilson as the official football of the National Football League. So they've been around doing that now for a very long time. A couple of famous birthdays, including a former Jacksonville Jaguar, Andre Rison, born this date in 1967. Of course, he spent part of that 1996 season here in Jacksonville. But a much more important birthday in Jacksonville history today, Jaguars fans. Without him, one of the pride of the Jaguars would not be here. 42 years old today, born March 18th, 1973, after going 20 of 24 for 294 yards and two touchdowns as the Jacksonville Jaguars beat Baltimore in 1997, his only start in a Jaguars uniform. Rob Johnson. Happy birthday to Rob Johnson. Without Rob, there would be no Fred.
How old is Rob?
Rob is 42 years old.
Wow.
Today. Yeah.
I bet he hasn't changed a bit, too.
Yeah. Without Rob Johnson, no Fred Taylor. Obviously, they traded him that next offseason for a first and a fourth round draft pick. That first draft pick became the ninth overall, turned into Fred Taylor. We all know how that worked out for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Tavian Banks taken in the fourth round. Obviously, his career shortened because of some injury problems. But Fred Taylor is here because Rob Johnson was born 42 years ago today.
Always surprised he wasn't better.
Yeah.
Good player.
Yeah.
Thought he could have been.
So happy birthday to Rob Johnson. as well as Andre Rison on this date in football history. It's presented today by the Best Fence Company of Jacksonville. At Best Fence, the mission is to fabricate and install the highest quality product at a competitive price while providing unsurpassed customer service. Fencing is an investment in your home. Your family will feel protected, and you'll breathe easier knowing Best Fence installed your new fence. Best Fence provides professional free estimates at your convenience. Call them today at 904-268-1638 or visit bestfencejacks.net for more information. That is this date in football history.
Now, the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your Jacksonville area Honda dealers.
Bengals defensive tackle Devon Still has watched his four-year-old daughter, Leah, fight with stage 4 neuroblastoma cancer since June of last summer. The Bengals made an awesome move to keep him on the practice squad rather than cut him so his daughter could continue receiving the medical care. Well, some great news came out yesterday. Leah and his family were informed by doctors that they did not see any active disease in her body. The Raiders struck out on DeMarco Murray, so they got the next best thing, Trent Richardson. The Raiders agreed to a deal with the former Browns and Colts running back yesterday. Richardson believes that his time with the Colts was a bad marriage and that he did not fit the system. And finally, free agent tight end Charles Clay has signed a 5-year, $38 million offer sheet with the Bills just a few weeks after the Dolphins gave him the transition tag. The deal is structured to attack the Dolphins' salary cap in 2016 with $24.5 million coming in the first 2 years of the deal. The Dolphins now have 5 days to match the Buffalo Bills offer. And that's it. That's all I have for the Honda Drive Around the NFL.
You know, the Charles Clay situation is an interesting one in that they placed the transition tag on him during that period where you can place the franchise or transition tag on a player. The Cleveland Browns, who from the outside looking in look like just a mess right now, have Jordan Cameron, who I get has the concussion problems. Maybe you don't want to get stuck in a 4 or 5 year deal with that type of player. But it was obviously a guy that Cleveland wanted to keep based on the fact that they did offer him that 2-year, $15 million contract, but didn't put the transition tag on him so that they could control him if they wanted to, which is weird because they did exactly that with Alex Mack the previous offseason to make sure they weren't letting a player of that caliber walk out the door. Miami, after spending all that money on Ndamukong Suh, probably looked and said, whoa, you know, another team probably could make an offer to Charles Clay that we can't or won't be willing to match. What are our other options in free agency? Jordan Cameron takes the same contract that he was offered from Cleveland to go play in Miami, 2 years, $15 million, and now it looks like the Miami Dolphins may let Charles Clay walk. I mean, it's a crazy situation, and to me, the most interesting part of it is the continued dysfunction of that Cleveland Browns organization and trying to figure out how to handle their own personnel.
Yeah, and it's always hard to know when you're not around a team why they're making the decisions. Much like Chip Kelly, you can sort of stand outside and say, what's he doing, what's he doing? You know, you wonder if they have a plan from the outside. It certainly looks questionable. It's probably the best word to say.
Yeah, and the transition tag, if you're going to sign the tag itself, if, say, he wasn't offered a contract by anybody, you didn't work out a long-term deal, it's the average of the top 10 at your position, which for tight end was something around $7 million,
right.
I want to say. So essentially, 5 years, 38, if that is actually the numbers that are going to be coming from Buffalo.
It basically allows you to allow the other team to set the market, but it gives you the right to match.
Yeah.
But you don't get anything back for it if you lose a player.
Right.
So, again, it's just a little bit less of a commitment, but it still gives you an option if somebody signs your guy.
It's essentially used to let somebody else negotiate a contract for you, generally speaking. You usually put a transition tag on a player you want to keep, but you're not exactly sure
it's hard to know why Miami would match because they would have got a tight end.
Right, because they signed Jordan Cameron.
Right.
And I think they got put in a position where they could see Buffalo making an offer that they couldn't or wouldn't match for a guy like Charles Clay. So they said, we need to find another answer in free agency. So they went out and signed Jordan Cameron. Now they're probably going to let Charles Clay go to Buffalo, who's essentially signing for a five-year version of that transition tag. If
right.
it is 5 years and $38 million, that's about $7 million a year
right.
for Charles Clay. And honestly, on the back end of that, if he's playing through those 5 years, $7 million a year for tight end will probably be much
fine.
Less than 10th.
Right. Very rare to play out a contract if it's your second contract.
Right. No, it is rare, but man, an interesting situation there. And as Tyler mentioned, Trent Richardson.
Bad fit.
Oh, my gosh.
It's always
Is he a good foot? Where does he fit?
It's always tough at running back to talk about a bad fit because so much of it is just running and whether you can hit the holes or not. You know, because there was another player who played better than he did in that fit,
mm-hmm.
it's harder to believe that argument than it would be in other cases.
Yeah.
So,
He's so bad.
Again, Andrew Luck, when you've got a quarterback and the defenses that you're opposing are worried about that quarterback,
mm-hmm.
it should be much, much easier as a running back to be functional.
Yeah, you would think so.
And he really wasn't in Indianapolis.
No, he wasn't. I saw some numbers from Pro Football Focus where they were talking about yards after contact for Trent Richardson, and for his first 2 years, he was like at 2.08 or
right.
something. His first year was 1.9 2 years ago, and it was all the way up to 2.4.
Yeah, the staggering thing is he was taken so high. I mean, you just don't see that, and to just really not be functional at all is just really striking at that position, because usually even a guy taken that high, if you were in an offense, again, where the defenses can't always focus on you, you can at least be productive. I mean,
sure.
Other backs, Donald Brown was productive with Andrew Luck. When you've got a quarterback, you can usually be productive even if you are not a great player, and he was not productive in Indianapolis. So we'll see if that changes.
No, I doubt it will when he goes to Oakland. But
wow, Syracuse announces that Jim Boeheim will retire after the 2017-18 season.
Hmm.
And their athletic director's out.
How about that? After all that scandal.
Oh, basketball news. I'm versatile, Tony.
After all that scandal for Jim Boeheim. And, you know, the Trent Richardson thing, as far as being drafted where he was, points to, I think fans lose sight a lot of just how much of a roll of the dice the draft is. And
yeah.
These teams all put their work in. They all try to vet these players. They all try to make the right decision for their team going forward. In the end, I looked at it a couple years ago because I was looking at quarterbacks specifically, but I wound up breaking down every position in the draft, and I'll see if I can find the stats here over the next couple weeks. But it essentially came down to the first round of the draft, if you're talking guys that are good players versus bad players, in the NFL it was about 50-50
mm-hmm.
in the first round of the draft. Top 10, that number shot all the way up to about 60-40.
Yep.
I mean, it's not like just because you have a top 10 pick,
no.
bam, you got it figured out. A lot of these guys fall through the cracks, and it's the bad teams stay bad
right.
because the guys they're picking in the top 10 every year tend to do that.
Right.
And it just puts you so far behind, and you have so much space that you have to catch up with all these other teams. But it's not like just because you have a top 5
no.
pick, that means you're going to nail it. You
Bill
hope
Polian.
You do.
When I was in Indy, Bill Polian used to say, and I forget the exact number he used, but it was not a very high number. You know, if you bat 600 in the draft, or I forget the exact number, but 600, 580, 620, somewhere around there, you're going to the playoffs every year. And if you get any higher than that, you're contending for the Super Bowl every year. And if you've got a franchise quarterback to put with it, well, then all of a sudden you've got a 10-year run.
Sure.
But nobody's hitting 850. Nobody's hitting 950, not even in the first round. It is a crapshoot, and it is a percentage game, and the percentages are sometimes very small. You're working a lot of hours, doing a lot of study, trying to increase your percentage in the draft by a little bit, and it is not a case where somebody's got the magic formula and saying, I'm going to hit. If your first rounders are on the – that's why a lot of the GMs say, I'm going to go after – doubles and singles. I'm not swinging for the fences because I do not want to miss in the first round. Missing in the first round, as we've seen around here, can be very, very costly for a franchise.
No, it can be very, very costly, and as I joked about around about on Friday, Cecil Short's one of the few guys that finished a contract that Gene Smith selected. I mean,
yeah,
they just didn't have guys that could even stay on the roster that were being drafted here for a period of years. And don't get me wrong either, I'm not saying that Dave Caldwell isn't held accountable when they miss.
Absolutely.
It's his job. Like, I get that it's a 50-50 proposition in the first round, and it's 60-40 in that top 10, whatever the numbers happen to be. You better be 60. I mean, that's your job, is to be one of those teams that is hitting the 60 in that kind of position.
And so much of it, too, is if you get the quarterback in place, then the other drafts become easier because you know what that player does well.
Sure.
It's easier to fit guys around him. And guess what? If that guy's the right guy, he makes guys who may have been marginal a little better. So that position, that's why it's so important. He can make a player, an offensive lineman that might have not looked great if he gets rid of the ball quickly. He can make a wide receiver look a little better than maybe he was. So that position is so key.
Well, yeah, you can certainly survive missing a draft pick or two if you have a franchise-changing quarterback. I mean,
Tom
Brady.
That's why they're valuable.
Right, Peyton Manning, these types of guys. Andrew Luck has taken a roster that really doesn't have a whole heck of a lot on it and made it really competitive. The last 3 years, they were in the AFC Championship game. And if you go back and look at that roster,
a great quarterback with field awareness can make an offensive line's job significantly easier.
No doubt. No doubt.
And it helps in the running. I mean, it helps in everything.
Yeah, and that's what they hope they got in Blake Bortles. We'll see. And it's, again, going to be one of the big stories going through this offseason, getting ready for the draft, getting ready for OTAs, is the progression of the second and third year guys on this roster and how critically important that is for this football team going forward. If Blake Bortles doesn't take a gigantic step forward in year number two, this team's in trouble in 2015. That is one of the keys that they are relying on. Marquise Pouncey, I don't know if you saw the comments that he had on former teammate Mike Wallace that he says weren't directed at Mike Wallace, but come on. I'll share what those comments were with you next. The Metro Rooter Wednesday continues here on Jaguars Today. Fat Tony, John Osher alongside here on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. All right, a couple ways for you to get involved in the show today. You can get on the Boston's Sports Bar and Restaurant text line at 641-1010. We already got a couple in on there. We'll talk about those here in just a couple moments. 641-1010 if you want to get involved with the show that way. Also, the fan feedback spotlight today. We're asking you, what letter grade would you give the Jags in free agency? On Twitter, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at John Osher, as well as at 1010XL Tyler, and of course on our Facebook page, Jaguars Today on Facebook. You can respond to those. We'll get to some of those responses here in about 20 minutes or so.
Is that Free Will by Rush?
That's what it sounds like to me.
Little Rush. Child of the 80s.
Not in the Hall of Fame. Can you believe that?
Oh, they are now, right?
It's a sham.
They got in last year, didn't they?
Get in, finally?
I think they finally got in. You.
They're Hall of Famers.
I haven't paid attention to the last two classes.
I'll check into it.
I wasn't a huge Rush guy, but I gotta say they're Hall of Famers.
Yeah, I would say they're probably worthy of being in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
When I was growing up, they were in the Rock 105 wheelhouse. That's all you heard.
2013, they got in.
Oh, 2013. See, yep. I'm way behind.
They should have gotten in 2012.
I think it's something like it's 25 years, I think, after your first album.
I guess the rules.
When you're eligible to finally get into the Hall of Fame there. But good for them. They deserve it.
They had to get receivers in first.
So. Yeah, there was a waiting list of wide receivers.
Right. There's a waiting list of three-piece Canadian bands had to get in first before them.
Name another.
That's right. That's right.
I got Rush, and I got nothing else.
With lead singing bass players.
Right. A texter, 641-1010 on the Boston Sports Bar and Restaurant text line. Why isn't Ace Sanders given the opportunity at the slot? He has the skill set to play that position and filled in fine his rookie year. Well, you're right. He did fill in fine his rookie year, caught 51 passes. But you're looking at a guy last year that caught, what, six?
Six.
So I think
it's clear they're looking somewhere else for the slot.
Yeah, the team isn't looking at Ace Sanders at that slot position. Maybe they're wrong for not doing it.
But that's not the direction. It does not seem like that's the direction they're going.
No.
I think he would have to really perform a lot better than he did last year in camp to be that slot guy.
Ace Sanders, Brian Walters, Tannen Doss are making or not making this team based on what they're doing on punt return. That's
correct.
The sense I have of right now. Two of those guys probably aren't going to be a part of this team once we get to the 53, and one of them will as a punt returner because none of them add enough as a wide receiver that you're keeping two of them
Tannen
around.
Tannen Doss will be interesting on that front. I thought he started to look, when he was healthy for a very brief time in camp or OTAs or whatever, he had some things that he did that you thought maybe he could be a little productive in there, but we'll see.
Yeah, and he's still a really young guy. I mean, you're talking about 25 years old. He'll be 26 when the season gets started, and that's kind of the options they have there. Mm-hmm. But it does feel like it's three guys for one spot, and Tannen Doss was a really effective player as a punt returner 2 years ago in the league. Had the unfortunate injury during camp last year, and we never got to see him do
it.
We haven't seen him do it in a Jaguars uniform at all. So he is kind of a big question mark coming into the season. A lot of people, though, disappointed him with good reason in what Ace Sanders did as a punt returner last year. I think that when you look at the punt return position in the league, good punt returners make the first guy miss every time.
Yep.
The great ones can make that second guy miss and get to that next level. You watch a guy like Julian Edelman, the next time the first guy downfield tackles him will be the first that I've seen it. He always makes that first guy miss.
It also helps a great deal. Most punt returners play on teams with consistent special teams around them. I don't think the Jaguars have had that yet under this regime. I mean, they've had a lot of guys. You know, everybody talks about the four core guys who they haven't had a chance to keep the core of their special teams together.
Right.
And that can really help the return game. That said, Ace was not what they expected him to be last year in the return game.
No, I mean, he just doesn't make that first guy miss. But I do think that there has been, when you listen to what Dave Caldwell said about a lot of these guys that are coming in, core four. I mean, I think that guys like Scuda and Sergio Brown, he feels like really helps them in the special teams aspect of what they want to do, too. And they were having to rotate so many guys in and out of that last year that that's where some of the inconsistency came
your
with
depth,
those units.
Your special teams, that's a hard thing to build. It's a hard thing to stay focused on. But that was clearly part of what they did during free agency was getting more good football players who could be depth and who could also help on special teams get better players on the field more often.
Yeah, and as is so often the case, you know, you don't realize it until it's not there.
Right.
You know, when special teams starts going bad, you're like, well, why is it bad?
Right.
You know, this seems like a pretty simple thing to put together, and then you dig a little bit deeper and you realize you got a lot of guys rotating in and out. Doesn't mean they don't need to be doing their job, but there is a consistency with a lot of teams that play well in special teams as far as the guys that are out there doing it.
They have some veterans on there who are again, you know, to use the word, they're the core of that special teams, and they're on all of them, and they do a lot of things well on those teams.
Another text in on the Boston Sports Bar and Restaurant text line. The Jaguars need Pro Bowl caliber players, and Greg Hardy is just that. When are they going to learn? Give the guy a shot. No different than Blackman. If he screws up, release him. He keeps his head on straight. Now we have a heck of a player. That's from Lewis there on the text line at 641-1010. Well, look, I don't know about Greg Hardy. I think he's a really, really talented player, but I don't blame the Jaguars for not being in on the sweepstakes on a guy like that.
No.
No, I mean, there's enough off-field baggage that you don't bring in a guy like that. And I don't think you don't bring him in because of what you're dealing with Justin Blackman. I think you make the evaluation on that player individually.
Right. And remember, they know Justin Blackman. They were around him for a period of time. They drafted Justin Blackman. So they're on that level, while they're not building any part of the roster based on Justin Blackman, there's certainly more of a feeling of, if this guy is going to be in the league, we know him, and there is that level of commitment to him. If he gets everything else in order,
right,
there is a feeling, let's have him, you know, let's be the team that gives him a chance if he's able to earn that chance.
Yeah.
And there's not that feel. I mean, there's no connection to Greg Hardy on that front.
No. Greg Hardy is one of those guys where if it came out the Jags were talking to him, I'd be like, all right. If they're not going to talk to him, I'm like, all right. I'm okay either way on that guy, and I get it. He's a really talented guy. And there are a group of fans out there who feel like the Jags don't go after guys with these problems because they don't want to deal with the headache of these guys potentially bringing that into the building. Maybe you feel like the team should be more aggressive with those types of players. That's fine. They're not going to be.
Remember, Dave is very big. I think it was Ryan O'Halloran who said it a couple weeks ago, and it sort of resonated. He's very big on guys being available. It's why he's not building the roster around Blackmon. I don't know that he necessarily wants to go after guys who have had a history, for whatever reason, injury or otherwise, of not being available to play.
Right.
And, you know, Greg Hardy didn't play last year. So perhaps there is an element of that that goes along with that of I want to be able to rely on the people that I bring into the building. And the first thing you say is, well, you can't rely on Justin Blackmon. But, well, they're not relying on Justin Blackmon. He has said many times, we're not counting on that as we build this roster. If he comes back, he's a bonus. That's different because they've sat in rooms with Justin Blackmon. They know this young man. So it's a different situation. You can't just say Blackmon Hardy. Blackmon's theirs. Hardy's not.
Sure. Be frustrated if you want to as a fan.
Not going to happen.
They're not going after Greg Hardy. And I'm okay with it. I'm okay with them not going after a guy who has that particular issue hanging over his head. I don't know how I would feel about this team bringing in a guy who was accused of what Greg Hardy was accused of.
Again, I don't get real emotional over that. I mean, in terms of bringing a guy in, I don't get real fired up either way about it. If they want to, if they've done the research, they're the ones who have to look at it and say, is this worth the risk? Is this worth whatever you're bringing in? If they do, then they have some reason they want to do it. But if they don't, I don't believe that you just go after every player who's out there with talent who has a off-field issue. You don't just cast the wide net and bring in every guy like that and hope for the best.
No.
That's not the way to build the structure of an organization.
Marquise Pouncey. I don't know if you saw this story, came out earlier today. Mike Wallace, who was a teammate with Marquise Pouncey in Pittsburgh for a number of years, went to Miami a handful of years ago. He's been traded to Minnesota this past weekend because of whatever happened in Week 17 and before that between Mike Wallace and that Miami Dolphins team. But he was benched in the second half of that game in Week 17 when the Dolphins lost to the New York Jets. There was an altercation there on the sideline. Marquise Pouncey and Mike Pouncey, both the Pouncey brothers, talking about it. But Marquise Pouncey's quote, he said, first of all, in my opinion, he's a coward. I never want a guy on my team like that to walk out on your band of brothers. Forget the things that don't happen in the game. Say you don't get the ball a lot or you mess up and they pull out. Forget all that. It's about playing for your brothers. So that was his quote, right, on the situation. Now, he came out and said...
Now, when was that quote? Was that right after the season?
No, that was this week.
Okay.
That was this week.
So a little time to stew on it, a little time to think.
He tweeted out yesterday, now I see why Marshawn Lynch gives the media short phrases. Now, he's basically saying that everyone is taking it out of context, assuming that he's making that comment at Mike Wallace. His comment was, first of all, in my opinion, he's a coward. I don't get where he thinks that we're stupid enough to fall in that trap. And Mike Wallace is backing him up on it. He's like, look, me and Marquise are cool.
Yeah, cool.
I know he's not saying anything about me, right? He's trying to defuse the situation.
Not about him.
It's just funny to me, these players, they get in these situations. He's clearly making a comment about Mike Wallace specifically. And then because of the heat that comes on him for actually saying something honest about how he feels about another player in the league.
It's the media.
Right. It's the media's fault. You're taking me completely out of context.
Absolutely. Out of context.
It's unbelievable. They do this stuff all the time to us, John.
Out of context.
Like, we're the bad guy. You said he's a coward. You said you don't want a guy like that on your team.
Out of context.
And we're taking it completely out of context. He didn't even say guys like that. He said he.
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 He can mean many different things.
Oh, can it?
Tony.
Can it in that context?
See, right now you're taking it out of context. Tony.
Can it? Man, there's a lot of Tonys.
Yeah, that's right.
There's a lot of Tonys. I feel like you're talking about Baselli and not me. So say what you will.
I might be.
Say what you will.
He's not a coward.
But yeah, Mike Wallace, basically, he's not.
No.
I'm much more a coward than Tony Baselli. I'm a little scared just sitting under the picture.
It's intimidating. It's distracting is what it is.
Of Tony Baselli. All right, we'll get to the fan feedback spotlight here in just a moment. Your answers to the question, what grade would you give the Jaguars in free agency? At 1010XL Fat Tony, at John Osier, at 1010XL Tyler. Also on our Facebook page at Jaguars Today, we will get to some of your answers. How do the Jags do in free agency? What letter grade would you assign them as we continue on a Metro Rooter Wednesday edition of Jaguars Today here on 1010XL 92.5 FM? Coming down the last 10, 15 minutes or so, Mark Lamping has gotten a 5-year extension with the Jaguars.
I'm going to say it's a fantastic move.
You don't want to say anything that could be taken out of context?
Nothing out of context on the Lamping.
I'm not talking about that he.
Obviously, you can't look at this franchise for the last 3 years since he took over. Look at the business side of it. Look at what's been done.
Sure.
You can't listen to him speak at the State of the Franchise events without knowing what kind of a leader in terms of the direction of the franchise that he's been. So,
sure.
All kidding aside, I would think a no-brainer move.
Yeah, the partnership between Shad Khan and Mark Lamping has been good for the Jaguars, and it's been good for Jacksonville to this point. I think it makes a lot of sense to keep that going right now, the momentum they have in that front office. And look, they've been open and upfront about it as much as anybody that whatever they're doing away from the field, it's got to start showing up on the field with the football side of things. And I think everybody in the building understands that. But Lamping and Khan, that combination, have done an amazing job here in
Jacksonville. So just one more time, in case he's listening, great hire.
Great hire, Mark. We love having you here in Jacksonville, buddy.
But it is, I would think, a no-brainer move.
Yeah. Yeah. You would think, based on what's been happening. The fan feedback spotlight today, we ask fans, what moves you, brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships. Today we're asking, what grade would you give Jaguars in free agency? Some of the answers that we got today from Stevie at Irish Jaguar, they filled needs and allowed the draft to become about selecting talent rather than filling holes. From Eric, a solid B, not their fault at all, but missing McCourty and Cobb hurt. Thomas and Parnell are good gets. From the Duke of Duval, I'll give them a B. Addressing the offensive line and tight end position was key for Blake's progression. From David, I give them a C+. They almost messed up by pursuing DeMarco Murray. I'm relieved he went elsewhere. From Joey, B, they have a plan for these guys, but most are going to be starters for the first time. Hashtag maybe 2015. From Black Dog, you can't force players to come here. We are in good hands with Dave Caldwell. He gives them an A for their efforts. I'm more in line. I'm on the B side of things. I think that's about right.
Well, I think Caldwell would have given it a B. He said it, you know, when he said a double, you know, and there's no doubt in my mind that he likes the three guys that they pursued and got. And I think he also looks at it and sees Randall Cobb and Devin McCourty. Boy, that would have been a home run.
Yeah.
Because I know he looks at those spots and says there was a slight chance of getting good, good upgrades there, and they didn't get it. And when you look at the roster, they still need to make sure that those spots are fortified. So those places aren't done and aren't sure things yet. So I think a B's right. And if these guys come along and, you know, I think they know what they're getting out of Odrick. And I think they know what they're getting out of Julius Thomas. A key there is, what are you getting out of Parnell? Because you think, from what you've seen on tape, you think you've seen some really, really good things. And they wanted him over anybody else in the market, remember?
Yep.
So that's their guy. And can he do it consistently with it being his job on this line? That's what remains to be seen.
I think if you're looking at it from the perspective of what was their plan going into free agency and what they accomplished,
right,
it is kind of a home run,
right,
given what they were, what was actually available to them to accomplish. If the idea was, we're going to go after these five guys,
mm-hmm,
they landed the three that actually hit,
right,
free agency. The other two re-signed with their teams. You can't blame them,
right,
for that. I think we both have the sense they probably had the best parameters on the table,
yeah,
for Devin McCourty. Who knows what their offer was to a guy like Randall Cobb. But if their plan really was, we're going to go get these five guys, two of them re-sign, and mm-hmm, if we can't get McCourty, these are our three.
And interesting about Parnell, as you were talking, I was saying, he could have easily couched that differently after the fact, Dave, and could have easily, you know, because most people locally and just casual observers didn't really know much about Parnell, easily could have said, hey, we really wanted these four guys.
Sure.
And we'll see about Parnell. But it's a sign of how strongly they feel about him that he said, these were the three guys we wanted. This is clearly a guy that they believe can be a, I don't say core player, because right tackle, maybe not quite left tackle in terms of core, but there's no doubt that they felt strongly about this guy and believe he can be the answer on that right side.
Well, it's a really important position in the AFC South.
Mm-hmm.
With J.J. Watt, as long as he's in the division and playing at the level he is, that's who's going to look at J.J. Watt a lot when they play them twice a year. And you need a guy kind of like Parnell, at least based on what we've seen on tape.
Yep.
That nasty attitude. You would hope that when he gets that opportunity to go up against a guy like J.J. Watt, he's excited about that chance, especially a guy for the first time getting a chance to be a starter in the league. You would hope that he's ready for that kind of opportunity. Let's get out to the phone lines for the first time today, 641-1010. Do we still have Jim on the line, Tyler? All right, let's go to Jim right now. Hey, Jim.
First of all, let me just say this, guys. Johnny O twice in 1 week. Can you tell Dempsey to take another couple weeks off? That would be fine.
All right, we appreciate it.
All right, thanks. The other thing was, On the scouting, and you know, we talk about system quarterbacks and everything else, and you never talk about, you know, we always talk about here, well, you don't look at a player coming out of a certain school and saying, well, there's never been a good quarterback to come out of that school, or there's never been a good linebacker come out of that school. My question is that everybody's been fascinated with Vic Beasley, and I look at this and I go, has there ever been a great pass rusher come out of Clemson? But the thing I look at is, why don't you ever hear that there are system pass rushers or system, you know, players on other positions? And I just was curious if and I'll take the answer off the air, but I just was wondering if you'd heard anything along those lines, because I can't think of a good pass rusher come out of Clemson. I mean, Andre Branch has been so-so, and Daquan Bowers was so-so. So I just, you know, just get your input on that. Thanks, guys.
All right, Jim, appreciate the call. I think it's even unfair when you talk about system quarterbacks a lot of times. Mm-hmm. I think the player determines how good they're going to be in the league. And does it help them if they're playing in a certain style in college football? Maybe. But I think we've seen guys succeed playing all sorts of different things when they come to the National Football League. I don't like to judge based simply on the program that they played at.
And I guess it's so hard because there's so, comparatively speaking, there's so few great players to come out. I mean, to think that you're going to have, you know, I guess it's more unusual when it happens that there's a pattern where there's great ones. That's why Miami U was quarterback U, linebacker U at Penn State. You know, so I guess it's more unusual when a place produces two or three that are great ones, USC with running backs back in the day, that I kind of lean more toward that. And, you know, probably the answer is because people pay more attention to quarterbacks, that's why people talk about system quarterbacks than anything else.
No.
It's just a more examined position.
Sure.
And that there hasn't been a lot of great linebackers come out of Clemson that rush the passer. Well, there hasn't been probably not a lot of great pass rushers come out of any one particular school because it's hard to find them.
No, it's hard to find those guys that kind of play up to the expectations that some of the guys you mentioned there had when they came into the league. I will say, speaking to Vic Beasley specifically, I'm a little nervous about that type of player. I don't love how much weight he put on this offseason, and I don't love the fact that, look, I don't watch every game that Clemson played. I watched them play probably four or five times in the last 2 years, right? So maybe it's not fair to me to make a big judgment on what kind of player Vic Beasley is, but I can tell you when I watched him play, he disappeared a lot, and especially in games against teams like Florida State where Clemson really needed a guy like Vic Beasley to be an impact player in order to win those types of games. He wasn't there. He didn't show up in the way that you want him to. That doesn't mean he can't play at the NFL level, but a guy who puts on that kind of weight in an offseason and didn't show up in the big games, which is when I was watching Clemson, makes me a little bit nervous about the prospect of drafting him.
Was still, I think what impressed people, on the other side of that, what impressed people is he added that weight and was still able to run with it. So it leads you to believe that he can carry it if he can keep it on. But again, when you add that kind of a weight, you usually can't keep it on unless you add it sort of gradually over the course of a few years as you grow from being 21 to 24, 25.
Sure. And I don't watch tape of these guys. Like, I watch tape of the Jaguars after they play a game.
Right.
But I know what I'm looking at already. Mm-hmm. I don't watch a lot of tape of these guys coming out of college. I have, you know, vague ideas of what kind of players these guys are based on having watched them play. But that's my only judgment.
And remember,
on
the
guys
who do watch it, they still bat about 500 or 600.
Oh, yeah.
So
oh, yeah.
It's tough.
Oh, yeah.
It's
but
tough.
There's, I fall in love with a guy every year. I'm not going to lie, John. There's one guy every year that I'm like, that's my guy. And a couple years ago, it was Ziggy Ansah. And when they drafted.
Oh, so you were talking about Dempsey.
No.
No, you mean players.
No, it was Ziggy a couple years ago. I just loved that kid. And Mike Evans was my guy last year, that big physical freak mm-hmm. of a wide receiver I fall in love with. I know I fall into that trap, and I'm willing to admit
they were pretty good players.
Yeah, and I Michael Floyd was my guy the year that they drafted Blackmon, too. I liked him more than I liked Blackmon, but that's still to be played out.
Yep.
Blackmon never got on the field. Floyd turned into a pretty good player
mm-hmm.
out there in Arizona. But look, the draft, we're about a month and a half away from that thing. Vic Beasley certainly could be a consideration for this football team at number 3. I haven't heard anything to make me think he's not a consideration. It's just everybody right now feels like it's Fowler.
Yeah, and that's the flavor of the month. And I'm sure, I mean, it's funny, now you're starting to see some mock drafts where Leonard Williams is sliding out of the top 3. And that's, you know, what you're going to get now, especially once the pro days are over with, are a couple of weeks of paralysis by analysis or of, okay, I'm going to knock Leonard Williams down, and you'll see other mocks do the same thing. There'll be some more significant mock drafts once teams get off the road and they get into really setting their draft board. And then the reporters start talking to some people, and you'll start seeing a little bit of information or misinformation leak out. So you'll see around the middle of April some mock drafts that really get interesting. It'll still be hard to know what's real and what's not, because you know why? Because it's the draft.
Sure. And we're probably 2-3 weeks away from any of that kind of information coming out. I know owners' meetings next week. You'll be out there for those.
I will
be out
there. If
I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
Hopefully we can catch up with you on Monday or Tuesday to talk a little bit about what's going on out there. Thank you so much for joining me for a second time this week. I know it's a grind.
No, it's always enjoyable.
Talk
it's always good. I mean, it's a grind for you because there is a such thing as too much John Osier.
And as I said on Monday.
And you've hit
here,
that. Yeah. Showed me you've hit that point.
There's such thing as too much Fat Tony as well. I hope the people at Jacksonville aren't sick of me yet, because you got 2 more days of me filling in for Mike Dempsey here. But Donovan Darius set to join me tomorrow, so it'll be very positive. The show tomorrow will be very positive with Donovan Darius coming in. John Osher, what do you got coming up this week on Jaguars.com?
Just Jaguars.com live today at 1. We'll have Scooter, and I believe Dwayne Walker is going to join us. So
cool.
It'll be a chance with Dwayne to really talk about some of the secondary moves and sort of what he expects out of this secondary. Always interesting to talk to D-Walk, because he really knows what he's doing back there and has interesting ideas on the secondary.
And familiar with a player like House since he coached
in
college.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, that's an area that is going to be under some scrutiny this year, because they need to get more turnovers. These guys that he's coaching need to take a step. They took a step last year, but it's a big year for that group and that position group.
No, it's a huge year for that group needing to take that kind of step forward, and hopefully you create a little more pass rush as opposed to just a bunch of sacks, but
absolutely
consistent pressure to make it a little bit easier on those guys. A lot still to come in this offseason for the Jacksonville Jaguars. For myself, Fat Tony, for John Osher.
Thank you.
For Tyler Devitt, for Joe Fortunato. We'll welcome in the boys of XL Prime Time next as we wrap things up here on a Metro Rooter Wednesday. Go Ospreys here on 1010XL 92.5 FM.